Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping right into the experiences of Don Feld. He is our retired Air Force colonel.
That's right.
And we're really focusing on his time as a Sandy pilot. This is during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Our main source here is episode 60 of the Military Tales channel on YouTube. It's a fantastic firsthand account from him.
Yeah, Colonel Feld really gives some incredible detail in that interview. It's perfect for understanding what those Sandy pilots actually went through.
Absolutely. So our mission for you in this deep dive is, well, to get a really clear picture of the challenges, the complexity, and honestly, the heroism involved in those air rescue operations.
Okay, so where do we start? His background.
Yeah, let's do that. So Don Feld, his inspiration, it seems, came partly from his dad, flew B-17s in World War II.
Ah, okay. A family connection to aviation.
Exactly. So he goes through ROTC at Iowa State, finishes pilot training, and initially he's actually supposed to fly A-37s.
Right, the Dragonfly.
Yeah.
A light attack jet.
But then during survival training, there's a switch. A surprise, really.
Yeah. This is where it gets interesting. He gets assigned to the A-1 Skyraider instead.
And his reaction and his buddies was kind of, what? This little prop plane.
Right. You know, they probably pictured themselves in jets, and suddenly it's this older propeller aircraft. It shows you, though, sometimes the workhorse isn't the flashy machine.
Definitely not little bitty when you see it up close. Feld talks about the size. I mean, a 12-foot propeller.
Eesh.
Huge. Fuselage comes up to your chest.
Oh, yeah. Massive. And the engine, that right, R-3350.
That's the one. 2,700 horsepower.
Which, I mean, that's the same engine type used in the B-29 Super Fortress bomber.
Wow. So basically a bomber engine in this, relatively speaking, smaller attack plane.
Exactly, which tells you a lot, right? It could carry a serious amount of weapons, and crucially, it could stay airborne, loiter over a rescue site for a long time. Both absolutely key for being a Sandy.
Okay, so he trains on the A-1, Hurlburt Field, Florida, then he deploys.
Yep, heads to Southeast Asia. Early 1970, he lands at Nakhon Phanom Royal Thai Air Force Base, NKP.
NKP, right on the border with Laos, a major hub for ops over the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
And his first assignment there is with the 22nd Special Operations Squadron. They call themselves the Zoros.
Zoros, okay. And what were they doing?
Flying night missions, truck interdiction, trying to stop supplies moving down the Ho Chi Minh Trail under the cover of darkness.
Sounds intense. And the scheduler. He mentions 90 days of flying, then just 3 days off.
Yeah, 90 and three. And well, it's relentless. Gives you a sense of the operational tempo, the pressure these guys were under constantly.
You'd think he'd hate the night flying, but actually, he kind of preferred it.
It's interesting. Why?
He talked about the quiet, the solitude up there, the stars, and, you know, the challenge of it all, operating in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
A different kind of flying.
And he also realized, with a bit of irony, that the A-1 he was flying, it was basically as old as he was.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that really hits home, doesn't it? Relying on this vintage tech in these incredibly dangerous situations adds another layer to their skill flying these veteran aircraft. So he gains experience, moves up from just flying the night missions to leading them, and then eventually he becomes a Sandy pilot.
The core rescue role.
Right. So for anyone listening who doesn't know, the Sandy's job was basically be on alert, ready to launch immediately if someone got shot down, then take charge of the rescue on scene.
And they had different ways of positioning the Sandys, right? Sometimes they'd just orbit over Laos, north or south, already in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Other times they'd sit alert on the ground at bases like Ubon, ready for a quick scramble depending on where a shoot down happened.
And this is 1970. Things are changing in the war. U.S. troops starting to withdraw. Aircraft being handed over to the South Vietnamese.
A period of transition, for sure.
Yeah.
And Feld himself, he bounced around a bit at NKP. Served with the 22nd, the Zoros.
Then the 62nd SOS.
And also the first SOS. They had a nickname, the Hobo Squad.
The Hobo Squad. Any idea why?
He doesn't really elaborate, but it might just be one of those informal unit things, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe reflecting a slightly different style or mission set. Shows the human side of it all.
Okay, so let's get into his first rescue. He's Sandy Low-Lead. This sounds like a big one.
It really is. An F-4 gets hit in the northern orbit area. And the flight lead for that F-4 is his friend, Fred Kischler.
Oh, wow. So, personal connection there.
Yeah. Kischler's plane is badly damaged, low on fuel. He can't manage the rescue. So he hands the lead over to Feld.
Talk about pressure. Suddenly, he's in charge. Arrives on scene, gets a quick brief from the FAC.
The forward air controller, yeah. The eyes in the sky, usually in a smaller, slower plane, directing things.
And the situation is bad. Heavy ground fire, focus along a road nearby, two pilots down.
So first job?
Mm.
Find the survivors. Which he does. They're near each other, thankfully.
And there's a Jolly Green helicopter, the rescue bird, already orbiting, ready to go in.
But not yet. The ground fire is too intense. So Feld's other job kicks in. Suppress the threat. He actually goes after a quad gun himself.
Directly engages it. Okay.
Has the urgency. Got to clear the path for the Jolly Green.
So, first attempt to bring the helicopter in. Down a valley towards that road.
Doesn't work. Too much fire. They have to pull out.
Which leads to a pretty extreme measure. Calling in F-4s to drop napalm.
Yeah. On the enemy positions along the road. But it's incredibly close to the survivors.
Wow, close.
Feld says it splashed up the hillside near them. I mean, that's a razor's edge between suppression and disaster. A really tough call in the heat of the moment.
And years later, he actually meets one of the F-4 pilots who dropped that napalm.
No kidding.
Yeah, at a reunion, he kind of acknowledged, you know, the pilot did what was needed under pressure, even if Feld maybe questioned the accuracy right then.
That's amazing. Just shows the bonds formed in those situations.
So napalm didn't quite do it. They try a second rescue attempt. Same approach.
Same result, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Still too much fire, and now it's coming from a new direction, too.
So, new tactic. Feld calls for A1s with white phosphorus rockets, Willy Pete.
Right, to create a smokescreen. Try and block the enemy's view along the valley.
Smart. Adaptable.
Got to try everything.
So third attempt, with the smokescreen. Still no go.
Still too dangerous. And get this, a small arms round actually hits the watch on one of the PJs, the pararescuemen, inside the Jolly Green.
Wow. Just millimeters away.
Exactly. And by now, it's getting dark. They don't have night rescue capability for the situation.
So the hardest decision, they have to call it off for the night.
Yeah. Imagine telling those guys on the ground they have to wait till morning. Feld communicates with them, gets crown the airborne command post to keep watch overnight. But still, agonizing.
And when Feld gets back to base, he finds out just how close he came. His A1's tail is full of holes.
From a silenced gun they hadn't even pinpointed during the fight. Just incredible.
But the good news, next morning, they go back in. Different approach. Over a mountain. Successful rescue. No major issues this time.
Fantastic. A testament to their persistence.
Though Feld mentions he never actually met the pilots he helped save, doesn't even remember their call sign.
That happens. The mission focus is so intense. Locate, suppress, extract. It's not always about personal connections afterwards.
Okay, second rescue he talks about. This involves another friend, Doug Carmichael.
Right. Doug's flying an A-7 Corsair II, coming back from North Vietnam towards NKP, and he's got engine trouble.
So Feld and Doug both head towards his position. It's a coordinated effort.
Exactly. Teamwork. And then they both hear it, the sound of the A-7 pilot ejecting.
Oh, man. So he's out.
Yep. Doug spots him coming down in his parachute. The A7 itself crashes, explodes in a rice paddy nearby.
But now it's getting late again. Dusk.
Yeah, dusk is setting in. A Jolly Green from Ubon, which is further away, probably won't make it in time before dark.
So Doug Carmichael orbits the survivor, keeps eyes on him. Feld gets on the radio.
Tries to get a helicopter scrambled from NKP itself, much closer.
But there's a problem. The base helicopter pilot is hesitant.
Understandably, maybe. Crossing the Mekong River meant going into Laos, into potentially hostile territory at dusk. It's risky.
But Feld knows leaving the A7 pilot out there overnight is even riskier.
Absolutely. He's completely vulnerable on the ground.
So Feld basically has to persuade him forcefully.
Yeah. He emphasizes, look, I'm Sandy. I'll provide cover. We can't leave him. He makes it clear the pilot has to go.
And it works.
It does. The helicopter goes, picks up the A7 pilot, brings him back safe. Feld's leadership made the difference there.
Definitely sounds like it. Okay, rescue number three, helicopter crew down near the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Right. And there's some initial confusion about how many people are actually on the ground.
But the critical thing Feld does immediately is contact Crown, the command aircraft. Why?
Because there's a B-52 arc light strike scheduled. Right for that same area.
Oh, no. Massive bombing run with survivors on the ground.
Exactly. Feld knows he has to stop it. Potential friendly fire catastrophe, so he gets it canceled. Or tries to.
Tries to. What happened?
Well, while he's still circling, making sure they've got eyes on all the helicopter survivors, the bombs start falling.
The arc light strike went ahead?
Apparently so, or at least part of it. He describes it as being terrifyingly close, maybe a mile away.
A mile sounds far, but with B-52s.
Yeah, a mile is not far enough from that kind of firepower. A very near miss.
Mm-hmm.
Shows the chaos, the communication challenges.
Look, the survivors were okay. They got picked up.
Yes. Confirmation came through later. Everyone was recovered safely. But a scary moment.
Unbelievably scary. Okay, that brings us to his fourth and actually his final rescue mission, Operation Tailwind. Heard of this one?
Yeah, Tailwind is pretty well documented. Big operation. Seld gets briefed at the TUOC, the operations center at NKP.
And there's a new element, CS gas, tear gas, basically.
Right, powdered tear gas, delivered in special munitions. The plan was unusual.
What was the situation?
About 120 friendly troops. U.S. Special Forces and Montagnard fighters were heavily engaged, pinned down by North Vietnamese forces in southern Laos.
Yeah.
Okay. Deep trouble.
They needed to break contact, get to a landing zone for extraction. The idea was to use the CS gas.
To suppress the enemy. Yeah. Right. But it would also affect the friendlies.
Yeah.
A calculated risk to create an opening.
So Fell's flight is tasked with dropping the CS gas. He's a first lieutenant at this point.
But he's leading the flight. His wingman is Major Art Bishop.
Lieutenant leading a major.
Yeah. Based on experience, Feld had the A1 time, the Sandy time. In these specialized roles, experience often trumped rank for who took the lead. Pragmatic.
Makes sense. So the CS gas munition, Blue 32, he called it, big canisters under the wings.
And deploying it was tricky. Had to fly really low, 50 feet above the trees.
50 feet in an area known for ground fire.
Exactly. And you had to hold the release for like 30 seconds to get the powder to disperse properly under the jungle canopy. Extremely hazardous flying.
So they arrive on scene, overcast weather.
Feld has to spiral down below the clouds to coordinate with the FAC on the ground, leaving Major Bishop orbiting above.
FAC guides him in, drop the CS along the enemy line, then across it.
And Feld says he could hear it on the FM radio immediately. The troops reacting to the gas, coughing, choking.
Yeah.
Unpleasant, but it worked.
It let them break contact.
Yes. They started disengaging, moving towards the designated helicopter landing zones.
Mission accomplished for the CS drop, but the FAC asks Feld to stick around.
Right. Feld still had other ordnance rockets, guns, in case they were needed during the extraction phase.
And that extraction, it was brutal. Barry Peterson's book, Operation Tailwind, covers it in detail.
Yeah. Incredibly harrowing. The last helicopter lifting out lost both engines right after takeoff.
Both engines. Wow.
Crash landed on a sandbar. A spare chopper had to go in and rescue everyone from the downed bird, many wounded.
That's where the medic, Gary Mike Rose, comes in, Medal of Honor recipient.
Absolutely crucial role he played on the ground, treating casualties under fire.
Yeah.
Just incredible bravery.
And a reason the enemy resistance was so fierce during Tailwind.
They'd captured a huge amount of intelligence just before. Code books, maps from a North Vietnamese transportation HQ. They were desperate to stop the U.S. Montagnard force from getting away with it.
Right. So in the middle of all this, Feld notices his A1 engine is starting to run rough.
Not good. Mm-hmm. Especially after flying so low, maybe taking unseen hits or just the strain on an old engine.
He's low on fuel, engine's acting up. He decides not to go back and try to destroy that downed helicopter on the sandbar.
Makes sense. Priority is getting his own plane down safely.
He diverts to Da Nang Air Base. Declares an emergency.
And the engine pretty much seizes up right as he lands. Just made it.
Close call. Required days of repairs. Did he think it was battle damage?
He actually suspected it wasn't direct ground fire. Just the age and the hard running of the engine finally catching up. These were old planes pushed to their limits.
And that mission, Operation Tailwind, was pretty much his last one in Vietnam. He left shortly after.
Wow. What a way to finish a tour.
So back home, what did he do? Became a T-38 instructor pilot, where he trained, actually.
Full circle. Got a master's in engineering. Worked on the F-16 program as a software engineer.
Impressive pivot. Shows his technical side, too.
And then later on, guess who recruits him for a new flying job?
Let me guess. Fred Kischler. The friend whose F-4 went down on Feld's first Sandy mission.
You got it. Kischler recruits him into the U-2 program. High altitude reconnaissance. From the low level, down in the dirt, A1 to the U-2 spy plane at the edge of space.
Yeah.
What a contrast.
He actually compared them, though. Both tail draggers. And he enjoyed the U-2 flying, the high altitude, 70,000 feet.
The solitude again, maybe? Like the night flying in the A1?
Exactly what he said. Echoed that enjoyment of single pilot missions, just him and the machine.
Fascinating career arc.
He reflects on being so young, flying those A1 missions. The danger. And he expresses real pride in the A1 itself and in the Air Force's whole commitment to search and rescue.
That leave no one behind ethos. It was and is incredibly strong.
And speaking of the A1, just recently an actual A1H involved in rescues was dedicated at the Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, fantastic. They have a great section on Southeast Asia there.
Feld was there for the unveiling. Later, they had an event with PJs and FACs, too.
The pararescue men. He speaks highly of them, right?
Absolutely. Their unique character, their bravery, talks about the green footprints, their symbol.
The Jolly Green Crews and the PJs, yeah,
Yeah.
that's their mark.
And a funny little story. Apparently, at the dedication, some PJs playfully added their green footprints to the newly dedicated A1H display.
Huh. That sounds exactly like something they do. Shows that spirit, that camaraderie.
So, wrapping this up, this deep dive into Donfeld's story, especially from that Military Tales episode, it just highlights incredible bravery, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The dedication, the skill, operating under such extreme risk and complexity is awe-inspiring.
The dangers of SAR and combat zones are just immense. His stories really bring that home.
They really do. You get a visceral sense of the challenges.
For me, the real aha moment is just grasping the sheer importance of that A1 Skyraider. It wasn't glamorous, maybe, but it was the tool for the job and that unwavering focus on saving downed crews.
Yeah, that commitment is powerful. It defined the Sandy mission.
So, final thought for you listening. Thinking about Feld's experiences, the risks taken, the lives saved, what enduring lessons can we draw from this? About leadership, maybe, resilience, the value placed on individual lives, even in the midst of conflict.
That's a great question to ponder. What stays with us from stories like these long after the fighting stops? It really makes you think about the human cost, but also the human spirit.